Welcome to The Spirit Revolution with Kathleen McGowan and Philip Coppens.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's not just the start of a new decade, of a new year, 2010, but also the start of our new radio show.
Yes, it is. We're very excited to be here.
Now, we have settled on the name The Spirit Revolution for a very specific purpose, because coming up to 3 years to 2012, we feel that the world is lacking, sadly, in one thing, which is wisdom and spirit.
When we first decided to do this show, we were originally going to call it the beginning of the world, as opposed to the end of the world, because there was so much doom and gloom and destruction going on. There's so much apocalyptic information out there about 2012. And what first really brought us together on this idea was that we knew we both really wanted to get out there and combat all of this apocalyptic information. So we thought, what better to combat the end of the world than to use the beginning of the world. So in a lot of ways, this is the beginning of the world. But in order to get to the beginning of the world, we have to make some major changes. We have to make changes in ourselves, and we have to make changes in the planet. And that is why we're calling it the Spirit Revolution.
And there is a definition of revolution, because a lot of people, when they are confronted with the word revolution, quite often have visions of an American or a French revolution, lots of bloodshed. But that's actually not really the case when you look at the world's evolution.
Well, I'm actually thinking of it more of a John Lennon kind of revolution. You say you want a revolution, well, we all want to change the world. But as a writer, I'm a big fan of etymology and the origins of words, so I decided I wanted to take a look at what revolution really meant before we settled on this term. And I discovered that the word originally came out of the 1400s and had absolutely nothing to do with war. It meant an instance of great change in affairs. And I thought, that's really what we're talking about, isn't it? We're talking about great changes happening right now in our own affairs, personally and globally. So I liked that. And I also like the fun little play on words that comes out of revolution when you break it down. You take the R and evolution. So revolution really is our evolution.
And also in the light of 2012, one of the pervasive messages of 2012 is the fact that it's something to do with the stars. And obviously revolution of our night sky is also somehow embedded in that. So there's that other celestial layer in that word as well.
So there we go, the spiritual revolution, a spirit revolution. So what we hope to do is make your Tuesday nights a little more fun, a little more interesting, interview some amazing, wonderful, inspirational people who are spiritual revolutionaries, define what it is to be a spiritual revolutionary, and maybe encourage you to become spiritual revolutionaries yourself. For those of you who are new to us, or know maybe the work of Philip Coppens, or perhaps my work, but maybe don't know both of us, since this is the first show, we thought it might be fun to tell you a little bit about ourselves and how we met and how we ended up here. My name is Kathleen McGowan. I am best known as a fiction author, but I'm going to let Philip go ahead and tell you a little bit more about me, and then I'm going to tell you a little more about him. I think that might be more fun.
Well, Kathleen McGowan is, as you've just pointed out, a best-selling fiction author. You had a New York Times bestseller with The Expected One. And The Expected One is part of a series of books to do with Mary Magdalene and unknown women in the history. Now, The Expected One focuses on the time around Jesus Christ, specifically on Mary Magdalene. And then in the Book of Love, you go deeper into Matilda of Tuscany specifically, and another few women from the era of really a period of time when we don't really think there are any women about, because we never seem to read about them. And you have got an upcoming book out in May, which is called The Poet Prince, which takes that story forward into the 15th century, to Florence, where once again the Renaissance, with people like Leonardo da Vinci and Botticelli and Michelangelo, are really famous, but once again you would think it's void of women. And in The Poet Prince, you put women once again back into that storyline to come up with pretty much what history is always about, which is this strange mixture of men and women, which sometimes sounds weird, but we keep forgetting that. And in the meantime, you have published The Source of Miracles, which was your first non-fiction book. And we'll come back to The Source of Miracles later on in the show, because it is really an excellent book which gives people tremendous amounts of tools to pretty much live a life in a very much richer way than some of those other self-help books out there are pretending to offer.
Well, thank you, Philip. Very nicely done. I just want to add that my fiction, for the most part, is about spiritual revolutionaries. I really set out when I began writing my fiction series to really recapture history in a new way and unveil all these hidden layers. And those hidden layers, for the most part, are women who have been completely forgotten, buried, or scapegoated throughout history. And what becomes very, very important about this, certainly with Mary Magdalene, then later on with Matilda Tuscany and a number of other women, is that they were all spiritual revolutionaries. I mean, we talk a lot about Mary Magdalene. I certainly became known for writing this book about Mary Magdalene being married to Jesus. Of course, the Da Vinci Code makes that point. But for me, that really wasn't the point of Mary Magdalene's story. The point of Mary Magdalene's story is that she is a spiritual revolutionary, that there is an argument that she is the true founder of Christianity in the Western world, that she started the first churches, she started the first missions. She was this extraordinary character, and not only that, but from her, a lineage of women is born and exists throughout history for the last 2,000 years who have all been spiritual revolutionaries, and yet many, many of them are forgotten. So that was the essence of why I wrote that series, which started out as a trilogy and, of course, has become so big now in terms of how much information there is to get out into the world, that it's now a series, and I'm excited to announce that there will be many more than 3 books. So thank you, Philip, very much for that introduction.
Thank you. Well, my brief introduction is that I'm Philip Coppens. I started out trying to change some of the landscape, the alternative science landscape of Belgium and the Netherlands in 1995 with a foundation called Frontier Sciences Foundation. And since then, I have moved more into international and specifically English language waters with a series of books and right now a radio show. So who am I apart from that?
Now, it's funny because Philip and I met about a year ago for the first time. We've been working together now for almost a year. Actually, we didn't meet until May of 2009, although what we discovered after being introduced is that we've been walking the same path for about 14 years now. As a matter of fact, we both began our journey in the magical little village of Rennes-le-Château in the southwest of France in 1995, within a few weeks of each other. So in some strange way, we've both been living this very similar life and doing very similar research, although we never encountered each other. However, I will say that I have several Philip Coppens books on my bookshelf and have gone back and forth to Philip's research over the last years. So for quite some time, long before being introduced to Philip, I believe that he was sort of the most unique and interesting voice happening out in esoterica in the world. And his most recent book, Servants of the Grail, I think is the most extraordinary book on the Grail. Again, incredibly unique and rich research on and background into the history of the Grail legends that I had never seen anywhere before. So it was really exciting to me to be introduced to Philip, because there was so much about his work that I was interested in. But specifically, we began speaking about 2012, and he had just finished work on a DVD, which for my time and money is the single best DVD out there on the 2012 phenomena. And I'm going to let him talk about that for a minute, because it is really was in so many ways the foundation, the cornerstone of what ended up creating this radio show and a number of other projects about 2012.
Well, my ambition with the 2012 DVD was, first of all, to create something which you can only do on DVD and which you can't do on television, which is create multiple layers to one storytelling. Because a DVD, let's face it, the second time you put it in, you want to just see it in slightly different eyes than the first time you have been watching and listening to it. Now, whenever you look at the 2012 phenomenon, which is not that old, it has become something of like a vogue in recent years. When you look at it, pretty much what it is, it's catastrophe, but adapted to the 2012 phenomenon. So all the documentaries which you saw in the 1990s, which spoke about Atlantis and the destruction of this and that, is now being reapplied to the 2012 phenomena. And rather than something which happened thousands of years ago, it is supposedly going to happen soonish. And once again, we are using and abusing an ancient civilization, in this case the Maya, to try and hammer home pretty much something which is a very typical Western phenomenon, which is the fact that we are all going to die and we should all be very scared. And when it comes to things like spirit revolution, fear is something which is very, very bad, because guess what? Keep the people silent and nothing will happen.
Fear rules. And the first obligation of a spiritual revolutionary is to fight fear.
So, rather than fight the future, we should all fight fear. And the message in the 2012 DVD which I was trying to put in was actually to bring out what the 2012 phenomenon really was all about. And for that, you have to look to it some of the leading lights in 2012 research, and also to look at what the minds are saying about 2012 and their days and their times. Because guess what? 2012, even though we are seeing it on the History Channel and the Discovery Channel, how many Mayan people do you actually see being interviewed? 2012 is a typical Mayan phenomenon. They have all the experts. We have got one or two. Now, this is actually my big revelation about the 2012 phenomenon, which is just go and look at the people in Guatemala and Mexico and see what they're doing. And they are seeing the 2012 phenomenon specifically for what this radio show is being called, which is a spiritual revolution. They are shaking hundreds of years of Catholic oppression away from their shoulders and are actually saying, hold on here, we have a very unique and a very individual identity, and we want to once again take this out. And we want to be ourselves, and we want to once again integrate all of this tremendous shamanic spiritual wisdom which we have accumulated over hundreds and thousands of years, and we want to live this, breathe this, not just in oppressed little secret houses away from prying eyes, but actually out in the open, out in the village squares. And this is something which has been happening specifically in Guatemala over the last few years. And this was, to me, such a tremendous insight of what was happening. Now, talking about a revolution, I also fell in love with a term which Jeff Stray uses. And Jeff Stray is one of those people who has studied and observed the Mayan phenomenon, the 2012 phenomenon, for a number of years, and has really become a person who really understands what's happening with the 2012 phenomenon. And I've seen it escalate into something which is pretty close to a monster. But when you strip everything away, what you end up with, and this is where I love Jeff's terminology, he has called it an evolutionary opportunity. And it's an evolutionary opportunity to have a spirit revolution.
Well, I've become a great fan of Jeff Stray after watching this video, and I want to say that I have watched it about 5 times now because I can't get enough of it, and also because there are so many layers to the information on this DVD that I've really needed to watch it that many times to understand all of it, because some of it is, you know, some of the information in there about the meaning of time and the essence of time and what the ancients were teaching us about time was so completely new for me and so revolutionary and so mind-blowing that, like I said, I can't get enough of it. And I really want to say that Jeff Stray's information in the video is also riveting. He has a new book out, which I'm also very excited about. And one of the things I want to say to everyone listening is that if you go to our website, spiritrevolution.com, we are going to give you links to how to get the DVD, to information on Philip's books, my books, and the books and other works of the people who we are going to be interviewing and recommending, including Jeff Stray's new book. So definitely check it out. But yes, Jeff was the first one that I am aware of to use that term evolutionary opportunity. And that is what we're looking at. We're looking at this period between now and December 21st, 2012 is our ultimate evolutionary opportunity as humans and as essences of spirit. We will never again in our lifetimes, maybe not even in human history, have an opportunity to evolve spiritually in the way that we have right now. And it's time for us to really jump out and grab that. And your DVD is a great tool for really getting an understanding of what the ancients were trying to do. And I just want to say, as a final piece of that, is what is exciting to me when you talk about the people of Guatemala saying, you know what, we want to reclaim our culture, we want to reclaim our identity, we want to go back to this incredibly mystical shamanistic tradition that we have. A lot of what I write about in my books is how we have lost our mysticism, how we have lost the shaman that lives within us. So much in the Western world of that mystical shamanistic tradition has been beaten out of us, or was burned at the stake, or was, you know, hung during various trials, to the point that it didn't exist anymore. So I see, for me, this period working up to 2012 is really an amazing opportunity to start bringing all of that shamanic wisdom back, whether it is the teachings of the ancient Egyptians, which you certainly know so much about, the teachings of the Mayans, the teachings of the Gnostic Christians, all these different wisdom traditions that are so important and so rich and so beautiful. I think it really is our time to stand up and reclaim those traditions and reclaim our own mysticism and reclaim our own connection to the divine. And that, for me, is the essence of a spiritual revolution.
And the other message, I think, is that we are actually, as you were pointing out, we are already living in those times. The Mayan are not talking about an end time which somehow happens on the morning of December 21st, 2012. For them, the end of times, a period of great change, started in 1993. And what I enjoy so much is looking at this time between 1993 and 2012. And actually, the world has changed so much since 1993. We have become a global village due to the internet, due to radical changes in telecommunication industry, and to some extent the democratization of airline and the way we are able to travel. We have become a global village, which is, for the first time ever in history, the world is united. And that is something which governments and social orders and religions have been unable to cope with. And it is the biggest challenge to address over the next few years, and that is very much part and parcel of the spiritual revolution, because guess what? Mankind as a whole is moving at a pace which is faster than the political and religious frameworks are actually able to do. That is a great sense of whereby any one of us can fill in those blanks and create a whole which is far bigger than just the individual pieces put together.
For the first time in human history, we are in a place where anyone can accomplish anything they want. And this was a huge impetus for me when I was writing my first nonfiction book, which has just come out these last few months. It came out for the holiday season in 2009. It's called The Source of Miracles. And The Source of Miracles is semi-autobiographical, about how I have watched miracles transform my life and the lives of others. But most of all, it is it's a guide to how you can do that in your own life, very, very simply, through really, really simple steps, how we can all create and manifest miracles in our own lives, utilizing the power of prayer. And whereas this book really focuses on the way that I personally use the Lord's Prayer in my life as a method of manifesting miracles, I'm also very clear in this book. The book is non-denominational. It can be used by anyone who believes in a higher power, and it doesn't matter what you call that higher power, whether it's God or spirit or the goddess or the universe. As long as you believe that you are part of something that is bigger and greater than all of us, and you are able to connect with that, then I believe that you really can create miracles. And it's a really simple, simple process of remembering who you are and what you're here to do. And it's really a mission-driven process. And for me, a lot of what we're going to be talking about on this show in the upcoming weeks and months is this whole concept of living a mission-driven life. I thoroughly believe that we all came here with a specific set of goals to accomplish, spiritually, personally, and globally. In The Source of Miracles, I refer to it as the promise that you made, the promise you made to God, the promise you made to yourself, the promise that you made to other people. And part and parcel to that promise is a commitment to advancing the state of this planet, to making the world a better place. And another reason I wanted to write this book is not only because I know this process works, this process is utterly transformational and completely foolproof. Now, I know you've all heard that before, and it sounds like snake oil, because most often we have been sold a bill of goods with a lot of these sort of instant manifestation programs, and that's exactly why I wanted to write this book. I wanted to write a book about remembering that the source of miracles is our own connection to the divine. It's not about visualizing a Ferrari in your driveway. It's not about wanting something so much that you can visualize it and see it. It's not about acquiring and being acquisitive and ask, believe, receive. It's not really about any of those things. Yes, you can have absolutely anything you want, and yes, you can manifest in an unlimited way, but there is an order to things, and that order requires responsibility and accountability and connection, and isn't something that should be done in a vacuum. So, you know, okay, I'm going to go ahead and say it. In a lot of ways, I wrote this book to as an antidote for what was happening with The Secret. You know, I'm not saying that The Secret is a bad thing, and it helped a lot of people. It opened a lot of people's minds and consciousness to the idea of thinking and seeing things a little bit differently. But I think that there is a lack of accountability. There is a lack of service that is found in a lot of these instant manifestation programs. And I really wanted to create something that brought us back to source. And that source is that we live on a planet with almost 7 billion other people. And we have to remember that. And we have to remember our connection to that. And we have to believe that we are here to be important and unique and responsible to ourselves and to those people and to the divine. And once we are all of those things, then we can have whatever we want in an unlimited way. And that's what I mean by the source of miracles. In a lot of ways, I suppose that is part of the spirit revolution, is changing the way that we think and remembering for the first time in about 25 years of me generation that it's not just about us. It's about everyone and how we all work together.
What I like about the book is that even though you have written it, the information in there is not necessarily created by you. It is an age-old wisdom which you have adapted to a modern era. One of the things which it's extracted from in a fictionalized account is the Book of Love. Whenever I was reading in the Book of Love, you have that same old hermetic tradition, this tradition which dates back to the ancient Egyptians and to all the great mystery traditions, which all talk about your mission, which is all about identifying who you are. And I think in a later broadcast we're going to talk about Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist, and very much Paulo Coelho's point of view is that when we are a child, we all know what we want to become, whether it's a fire engine officer or a police officer. But quite often our job functionalities we identify as a 5, a 7, or an 8-year-old child are quite often all to do about service to the community. And somehow along the way we forget, and then we forget even more. Well, ancient traditions wanted to make sure that people didn't forget, that people actually did some of these things. And masonry, for all what it has been given as a bad name, it also quite often does try to do a lot of social and charitable work. And that is putting the charity back into the mission statement, what some of these ancient traditions were all about. And over the years, with Christianity, some of these mystery traditions were made open to the Western world. One of the things I admire greatly about Jesus Christ is precisely that he took some of that wisdom outside of the temple and started to preach it to everybody who was available. And what you have done with the Source of Miracles is pretty much adapt it to a modern audience and put it out in a book format, because that's the way these things go these days.
Well, I wrote The Source of Miracles based on a wisdom tradition that I uncovered when I was studying the Cathar traditions in France. And it was in studying the Cathars and in studying a number of the secret mystery schools, the heretical mystery schools in France, that I discovered this process of how the Lord's Prayer was used by the Cathars, not just as their primary prayer, but as the cornerstone of their faith and as a working, living tradition. They lived this prayer every single day. The great Gothic cathedrals were built around the concepts that came from this prayer, and specifically Chartres Cathedral. And I talk about that at length in The Source of Miracles, and I certainly write about it at length in the Book of Love in fictional form. And so it was taking those traditions that were so beautiful and so powerful that spawned so much greatness. I mean, when you stand in a cathedral, a Gothic cathedral in France, any of them, but for me, Chartres specifically is the grandest of them all. When I stand in Chartres Cathedral, I am in awe of what humanity can achieve. It's an awe-inspiring thing to see that this is what human beings can accomplish at their greatest. And I really wanted to celebrate that, and I wanted to bring that to us in the 21st century and say, this is what we can do. The people who built those cathedrals were spiritual revolutionaries. Those cathedrals are temples. They are books in stone that celebrate spiritual and human accomplishment. And I really wanted to take that information and to bring it back to the 21st century. There is so much that we have forgotten because we were made to forget it, because we were not supposed to have our own power. And it is time for us to all take that power back individually so we can then give it back globally. And that is why I wrote The Source of Miracles. And I think this is a really good segue into introducing our first guest. We are very excited to have with us today Cynthia James, who is the Reverend Cynthia James. She is the Associate Minister at the Mile High Church in Denver. She is a transformational specialist. She's a lot of things, actually. Cynthia is a big inspiration in my life, and I'm very, very excited to have her here. Her work is transformational in so many ways. She is a very gifted musician and artist and an incredible power for spirit in the world. And she's a spiritual revolutionary. Welcome, Cynthia.
I'm so happy to be here. So happy to see your face.
You know, for this first show, I really wanted you here because this whole concept of spirit revolution and the reason that we wanted to call this show the Spirit Revolution was very, very important to me. But I know that for some people, this concept of revolution, this word revolution, maybe carries warlike or negative connotations. And I know you certainly look at it in a different way. So one of the first things I wanted to do is just talk to you about what you think a spirit revolution is and what does that mean to you to be a spiritual revolutionary?
Well, you know, when you think about revolutions, you really think about toppling some government or some experience or system that's not working, that's not supportive, that's not healthy. But I really think that spiritual revolutionaries bring another light. They bring about change. They bring about information that says, you know, you are here to be a light in this world, and so whatever way in which you are brought on the planet to be unique, to be powerful, to be dynamic, you use that to change, shift, and make a difference in the world. And so that means that you bring your light in a powerful way, and it takes chaos and moves it into love and peace and harmony.
So in that way, everyone who wants to be can and will be a spiritual revolutionary.
Absolutely, because we're all spirit. We're all here to express our divinity, our power, our greatness, our light. And so when you do that and you choose to use it in a way that's transformative, you are unstoppable.
Talk a little bit about some of these sort of extraordinary methods that you are using to help people learn how to use this kind of power in their own lives and in terms of their own transformation, their own evolution.
I think the first thing is for people to become aware of old wounds and old thinking patterns and old behaviors that are non-supportive, because those things running stop us from standing in that place of pure light and transformation. So for me, it's about learning techniques that transform energy. If everything is energy, then how do we take the energy of thoughts and beliefs and transform them and eradicate them so what's left is a space for spirit to fill?
So if you could give people listening one little thing that they could do right now that could help them on this path to bringing more light and more spirit into their own world, into their own lives, one little thing they could do to change right now, what would that be?
To identify in your body where there is constriction, and to become still with it and allow it to expand to its edge, because once you do that, just beyond that edge is peace, harmony, and love. And when you step into that place, the further you go into it, the more it expands and the more you understand that that energy living in your body is only attached to a story, an illusion.
Okay, so I want to take this into a place of experimentation.
Okay.
I want to do this, all
okay.
right? And I want people out there to do it with me.
Okay.
But when I hear you say, find what's constricted in your body, I'm thinking right now we're in a place where we hear the word recession all the time, where we're constantly being barraged by this fear of lack, you know, this idea that abundance no longer exists. And I think people are becoming very constricted and very afraid in this idea of economic crisis.
Right.
So for me, when you say constriction, I can feel that part in my stomach that says, uh-oh, I'm worried about money.
Okay.
And I think pretty much everybody out there can deal with, uh-oh, I'm worried about money. So I feel that constriction in my stomach that I'm worried about paying all my bills and keeping the money coming in and all of those things. And I think that that's a pretty universal concept right now.
Absolutely.
So how would you have me deal with that?
Okay, so I would tell you to sit in your chair and relax and just lean back and close your eyes and just don't resist that feeling in that part of the body.
Okay.
Just to be with it. And to notice that that energy doesn't just live in your body. It is an energy that is also outside of your body. So just notice that that energy is even maybe hovering above your head. Can you feel that?
Oh, yeah.
So what I want you to do then is to also start to understand that that energy has movement.
Okay.
And just allow that energy to start moving out. And it's big. It's not a small energy. So it's not going to be just in your house or in your yard. It's going to start moving out all across the planet, maybe, into the universe, maybe. So don't restrict it. Just allow yourself to allow it to go. Can you feel it moving?
Mm-hmm.
Good. So just let it go. And you have all the time that you need. So just allow it to move. And the way that you'll know that it's gotten to its edge is that it will stop.
Okay, so I'm just letting that energy kind of move out of me.
That's exactly right.
And go wherever it needs to go as long as it's out.
As long as it's out, exactly. So just let it go and keep breathing.
Okay.
Good. And tell me when you get to that place where that energy feels like it's stopping.
Okay, I feel like I've pushed it out.
Okay, great. Now, I want you to take one step beyond it. And the moment you step beyond it, you'll find that you're stepping into a place of peace.
And leaving it behind.
And leaving it behind.
That's how I feel. I feel I'm walking past it now doing this visualization with you. Like I'm walking past that area of constriction. I've moved past it.
That's right. Now, what I'd like you to do is to see yourself walking deeper and deeper into that place of peace. And as you walk deeper in, start to notice that that place is expanding. It's getting larger and larger. And you are starting to feel more and more peace.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Now, as you go deeper, I want you to, in your mind, turn around and look at that energy that was at the edge.
It's ugly.
Yes. But keep walking into the peace because the more you walk in, you'll start to notice that that old energy starts to shrink.
Mm-hmm.
And get smaller. And get smaller. And get smaller because you are walking deeper into the oneness, deeper into the wholeness. And so that energy has actually been living inside this wholeness, but it has no place because it's attached to a story. It's attached to a story that you're limited, that there's lack, that you're not supported. And so you watch it get smaller. And smaller until it just is completely gone, and what is left is you standing in this place of peace.
Which is a completely different story, isn't it?
Yes, wholeness and oneness and support. And from that place, you open to the creative expression that you are and to the infinite possibilities of living that are yours.
So I feel great. After doing that, and it's powerful. My question is, how do you hold on to that? Because I might feel great now, but tomorrow when a bill comes in the mail, I'm going to feel that same constriction again.
If you do this completely so that that energy has dissolved, It will not be back.
It does not come back.
It does not come back. Because it is not who you are. It's just a story that's been in your body as energy. The quantum physicists tell us that everything is energy until it's observed. I say everything is energy until it is named, and depending on what you name it, it becomes the reality.
So it's what you don't know that hurts you. It's everything that's still trapped back there in your subconscious that is dangerous. And once you pull it out and look at it and identify it and move past it, then you have moved into a new direction.
Absolutely.
It's brilliant.
So what got you involved? Why did you become interested in spirit revolution and starting to identify in our times and age spirit revolutionaries who are out there and are leading the way?
Well, from a personal point of view, I came from a really violent and chaotic childhood. And when I became aware that I was in charge of shifting my destiny in the way in which I was expressing in the world, then I thought, well, I cannot be the only one. There must be other people on the planet who have the ability to connect to techniques and technologies to shift consciousness. And if that is true, then there might even be a whole plethora of us on the planet who are looking for one another to converge and to network and to create energy and synergy for transforming the planet. That's exciting to me.
That's very exciting. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to create this show. We wanted to bring as many people together who are doing exactly that and start networking and start talking about it and start getting the information out there and start giving people resources so that they can do this in their own lives and also see how it is therefore impacting the rest of the world. You have had an amazing life and an amazing journey. You've been have worn so many different hats and played so many different roles and encountered so many different people. Who for you represents in our lifetime a real spirit revolutionary who you would look up to or you would want to identify as a role model?
Wow. There's actually a couple. One is Michael Beckwith, Michael Bernard Beckwith, because I was with him when he was teaching in his living room. And I watched him consistently, even though he's got the human experience in choosing those kinds of things. I watched him consistently go back to the absolute, saying, there is nothing outside of God that can deny, separate, remove us from the fulfillment of the expression that we came here to be. So that to me, has been a wonderful experience because, you know, now he's having all this exposure in the world. But he was living that stuff when he was meeting in his living room.
Right. Absolutely.
So that for me. And, you know, I want to say Oprah. And I want to say Oprah because I identify with her because she had an abusive childhood, which is very similar to mine. But what she has done consistently is said, I'm choosing to bring to light stuff that makes people uncomfortable.
Yes, absolutely. And makes people think.
Exactly. And I'm going to do that even though it may not be popular over here, even though this person may not like it. And she's not, you know, like a Mother Teresa or a Martin Luther King in that sense. But she is a revolutionary because she has revolutionized how we look at television from talk shows that aren't about looking at the gutter stuff, but really about, are we looking at spirit? Are we looking at consciousness? Are we looking at the way we show up in the world? Are we looking at the choices that we make? So for me, someone like her has said, I'm going to use media to ask people important questions.
And I think it's time for a media revolution, a spirit revolution in the media. And she's certainly opened those doors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I think it has done for us is it's said, what other people are out there now. If you look on internet radio, I mean, there are internet radio things all over that are looking at things, asking questions that weren't there before her. There are people who are wanting to say, you know, are you looking at your consciousness and your choices and that it has an impact, that everything that you do impacts the whole? That, to me, is exciting, because then what happens is we get to say through media, through television, through radio, through books, through magazines, we get to say, look at your life and choose differently, because your choice will and can transform humanity into a place of loving, which is why we're here.
And that is your choice. And something that Philip and I have talked about a lot is this idea that we have become a media culture that's very focused on other people. We've become this very voyeuristic culture. We want to see what the latest celebrities are doing. We're paying attention. We're looking at it on the internet. We've become very involved in gossip. And I think part of the media revolution that we would love to be a part of and we'd love to see happen is to start changing that and get people, instead of, let's stop looking outside of our lives and start looking inside of our lives. Instead of spending that energy wondering what Britney Spears or Paris Hilton is doing today, instead, how do we look at our own lives and say, what can we be doing today? How do we stop being a culture of voyeurs and start becoming a culture of people who are very, very active in our own lives and our own consciousness?
Yeah, you know, the thing is that the reason that we are looking at those people that way is because we have defined success as something that is material, as opposed to success being healthy, being vibrant, being alive, being clear, being focused, bringing your gifts to the planet in a way that shift old paradigms of being that cause separation. And so that looking out there says, well, if I get that, if I look like her, if I think like that, then I'm going to be this. If you look at magazine covers, it says, if you look like this, then you're a beautiful woman or a handsome man, as opposed to you are the beauty of your divine nature because you are on this planet.
And you are unique.
Exactly.
There, you are the only one like you. There is no one else who brings exactly the qualities, the special uniqueness that you have to this world.
That divine imprint.
And absolutely. That is beautiful.
Yes, it is. Well, and you wouldn't be here if you weren't essential. You
right.
wouldn't be here if you weren't important. And so once you get that, then you get to go, wow, my job is to find out how to express that unique nature in a way that's powerful and dynamic and mighty.
And how do I do that?
Exactly.
You have a process that you've also created called What Makes You Free.
What Will Set You Free.
What Will Set You Free. Mm-hmm. Will you talk about that for us?
Yeah. I work with people to identify places where they've been abused or traumatized, which many of us have, and to take those energies into a transformative state to eradicate them so that you now have all of this space to create and use your gifts in a way that serve humanity. And so for me, that's really important because I feel like that's what's been happening with my life. Because if I had gone down that old path of how I grew up, then I would have been out there with the people in my life who were drug addicts or in jail or whatever. So to take that energy and get rid of those old pains and judgments and move into places of forgiveness and healing, I now get to take that energy that is left, that is creative and infinite, really, and move into the world in a place that is healing. And so that's what I want to teach people to do. That's exciting for me to see the light bulbs go off to go, oh, I'm the same as any powerful person out in the world. And I can do whatever it is I came here to do, even if it's to be the best mother, the best teacher, the best driver, whatever that is, I get to do that in a powerful way because I don't have all these old energies and wounds running me.
Where can people learn more about your work?
Go to www.whatwillsetyoufree.com.
Reverend Cynthia James, a spiritual revolutionary, thank you so much for being with us.
And you are a spiritual revolutionary, and I'm happy to know you.
Interestingly enough, we met Cynthia James in Charlotte. So that's another interesting coincidence in life.
We did spend some time with Cynthia in August in Chartres and had an opportunity to talk about the various processes that I use in Source of Miracles and how they related to Chartres and the six-petal rose in the center of the labyrinth, which is something that I write about extensively. And Cynthia was taking a group through some very interesting training about the labyrinth, and I was working on her with that a little bit. And within the process of the Source of Miracles, I talk about it being a mission-driven process and really connecting with what your mission is, what your life's purpose is, why are you here, all of those things. But the piece that comes after that, once you're able to accept the fact that you have a mission and you have this unique set of qualities, the really, really big one, the second chapter in the book, the second petal of the rose, the piece that so many people have to struggle through is a little thing called surrender. And surrender was a really, really big issue for me, as it is for a lot of people who are, you know, strong-willed. We tend to sort of associate this word with surrender with giving up our power. When, in fact, the idea of surrender is actually claiming your power through surrendering those things that no longer serve you, surrendering those things that are impeding your progress. And I want to talk about surrender for a second because I want to introduce this song of Cynthia. Cynthia is a magnificent musician with an angelic voice, and she told me this great story about going to an event one day and hearing a message on the way to the event that she needed to sing the surrender song. And she said, but I don't have a surrender song. And she kept hearing this, but you need to sing the surrender song. So essentially she got to the event and she created on the spot through her own magnificent talent and spirit this song about surrender. And we're going to play it for you now. And I think it's absolutely magical.
Surrender, let it all go.
That was Cynthia James singing Let It Go. I like to call it the surrender song. You'll be able to get information on Cynthia, connect to her website by going to thespiritrevolution.com. We'll put you through to Cynthia's information. You can read more about her work. She has a wonderful, wonderful little book called What Will Set You Free, From Pain to Passion in 7 Weeks. And it is a great, great book about meditations and ways to let go of those things that have hurt you from your past. It comes with a meditation CD in the back, so you can listen to Cynthia actually walk you through the meditations as well as read the book. And I just can't recommend her work highly enough. She is truly one of the shining lights on the planet, and we were really honored to have her as our guest today. I also want to thank Corian Duraff for his beautiful music. You heard a little snippet of it at the opening of our show, a little song called The Grail in You. And we'll also connect you to Corian's website, where you can find out more about his very special music.
So, coming up to the end of the first episode of The Spirit Revolution, what would we give people home? What would be the very first message of 2010?
Well, I think that if I could give a message to the world for 2010, it would be this. Every single one of you is unique, important, and matters to this planet. Every one of you has something special and amazing and extraordinary to do in your lives. If you don't know what that is, there is no time like the present to start exploring it, celebrating it, finding out who you are, what you're here to do. Because once you grab onto that, once you align yourself with that highest purpose that you have, that understanding that you are truly unique and no one else can do what it is that you are here to do, then you are really on your way to creating all kinds of miracles in your life, creating a spiritual revolution within you, and really being a major contributor to making this world a better place. And I would certainly wish that for everybody.
And I think that we have been making lots of New Year's resolutions just a few days ago. And I definitely can think back to when I was younger. And most of these things just last one day. But they are very deep wishes, very deep desires, which bubble to the surface around this period of time, and this reflection when we've been spending time with family and friends. And we look towards the year which has finished, and we see the good things and the bad things which have happened, and we kind of like set a path towards the future. And that's very much what the Spirit Revolution is all about, to just not make that wish, that New Year's wish, something which lasts a day, but a lifetime.
And our commitment to you is to try to bring you as many tools as we can to help you on that path in your own revolution. So don't forget to visit thespiritrevolution.com, and we'll help you out with some recommendations on books, DVDs, websites, and other things to create your own spirit revolution.